This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 81, and I'm your host, Simon Bowen. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And every Thursday I release an episode of Past Lives Podcast, and that's called Paranormal Stories, and that is UFO cases as well as information on evidence of the afterlife. And if you want to hear the extended version of this interview, you'll need to join the Patreon campaign, where there are now over 75 episodes in the back catalogue. For $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week, and for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. If you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. And this week, I'm talking to Jessie Desmond about her book, Sources of the North, A History of UFOs in Alaska Airspace. Jessie spent a little time as the Alaska State Director for MUFON. I was in charge of the now-defunct paranormal group, Paranormal Explorers of Alaska, and still collects tidbits here and there of paranormal occurrences in Alaska. Now, there is a sound error where a scratchy noise is heard occasionally. Jessie and I tried to fix it, and even though we made a small fix, it's still there. I hope it doesn't affect your listening enjoyment. Hi, Jessie. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So we're going to be talking about your book. It's called Sources of the North, A History of UFOs in Alaskan Airspace. And it's a fascinating book, and there's so much detail in there. You must have put so much work in. But going back, how did your interest in UFOs start?
I've been like a lifetime UFO enthusiast, you could say. You know, as a kid, I always went for those books that had a whole bunch of different paranormal stories in them and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I had like Kolchak reruns on TV, and X-Files came out when I was growing up. And I feel like I was just right in the prime interest for it all. After I got a little older, I joined MUFON. And I started doing like my own investigations and stuff. And I've just been collecting stories of UFOs and even like local space development stuff. I've always been interested in that.
And do you have interests in other paranormal stuff, like, I don't know, ghost hunting or Bigfoot or anything else paranormal?
I do. I started out with ghost hunting because when I was in high school long ago, that was the easiest thing to do. It wasn't hard to get like a voice recorder, and I already had cameras and stuff. And, you know, you can just go anywhere and do that kind of thing. And so after that, I started doing a little more Bigfoot stuff. And in fact, recently I just put together with a group of people our second Boreal Bigfoot Expo. Here in Fairbanks, Alaska. And we had people like Jeff Meldrum and who else? We had John Dover and Red Grossinger and stuff show up. It's kind of cool because that seems to be what I'm doing now. And the UFO stuff, it's sometimes my interest wanes a little bit. It'll be real heavy with the ghost stuff, and then they'll die out, and it'll be super heavy with UFO stuff or something, and then that dies out and it's something else. I don't know. I get out and about, and I investigate all this kind of stuff.
And your book's interesting in the way that you put history in there, like the history of Alaska, which was interesting. Is it that from 1733, Russia claimed Alaska, and Alaska was part of Russia?
Yeah. You know, we're not too far away from the eastern side of Russia. Which is like Siberia. And I mean, there had once been the land bridge that connected Alaska to Russia. Long ago, there was like the Great Deluge, areas filled up. And so then we have the Bering Strait now. Russia came over, and I want to say that actually the Spanish had come up along the coast, and they had kind of mapped out part of Alaska. But they didn't really go into it. And then Russia came up and really kind of took hold. And they started interacting with the natives, and they moved inland a little bit and claimed Alaska for their own.
Right, it's fascinating. I never knew that part of history, how different the world might be if that had stayed part of Russia. Getting back to the book, there is so many sightings listed there. You must have put in so much work for it. How did you bring it all together?
I have a history degree, just a bachelor's in history. And so that helped a lot because that gave me a lot of resources to go to, especially since I live here and this is all like in state. Like I said, I've been collecting stories and stuff for a really long time, and that really helped. I reached out to some people like New Fork, which is the National UFO Reporting Center, which is based out of Washington State. There was a lot of good information from them. Linda Moulton Howe had some interesting information, especially on Pyramid, that gets a little blurb about it in the book. The FAA has all kinds of information for like the famous JAL 1628 flight, which happened in November of 1986. And then some of the other stuff, like I do mention in the beginning of the book, some Native mythology. You know, that just comes from living up here, and I'm part Native, and you kind of pick some of that stuff up when you have those two things going for you.
First part of the book I found really interesting because you talk about Native groups where there are a number of stories about tribesmen going up to the moon or going up into the sky.
The one I like the most out of all the stories that I have mentioned in there, there's this girl who gets an offer basically to, she's in a bad situation. She gets an offer from this older lady to be packed into like her basket. And then there's like this rushing wind kind of sound. And then all of a sudden she's like up at the moon, and this older lady's son is like this moon person. And then they end up having a kid, and she tries to return to her village for a visit, and they kind of reject the kid. It just seems like an abduction story almost, because she returns back to the UFO to live out her life. And it just seems so weird. It's just such a weird story. Just a weird story. I don't know how else to explain it. That's it in a nutshell, basically. But this girl, like, when she's up in the sky with this moon man, who apparently is just a pretty handsome looking guy, there she can ask for any kind of food that she wants. If she needs clothing, they can give her clothing. There's some sort of contraption where she can look at this. I think she might have mentioned it being like a pool of water or something like that, but it's like essentially like a view screen, and she can see her village from above, that sort of thing. It's, I don't know how old it is, because the oral traditions, sometimes you don't get a sense of time. You don't get a sense of time. Also, I found out that when you talk to a lot of Natives and they share these stories, there is no sense of time. They just share it.
So is it that you can't tell how long this story has been around? It could be decades or hundreds of years.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by there's no sense of time. You kind of wonder, how long has the story been around? Is it a newer story? Is it an older story? I think this one came out of a book where they're gathering stories from, I want to say, like the 50s. Even if it had been around for a little bit before then, they might have still had airplanes around the state, because we're a very airplane heavy state. We have a lot of bush pilots and stuff.
Yeah, I can imagine, because it's so big, Alaska, isn't it? From my point of view, living in England, what I imagine is it's just covered in snow and mountains, and the cities are quite far apart from each other, and the easiest way would be to fly around.
It would probably be the easiest way, but it's not the cheapest way. How about that? Alaska is very vast. Like, people That's usually the term that people use when they come up here and experience Alaska for the first time. It's just so vast.
And I suppose if you've got a lot of aircraft, there's a lot of people flying. I imagine there'd be the smaller planes where you just carries two or four people.
We just consider those the private planes, like bush planes.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that you can take out into the bush and, you know, land on the side of a river or something like that, if there's like an open gravel bar or something.
What I was thinking is, if there's a lot of people flying around, you're more likely to get sightings. Have you found that a lot of those pilots see stuff?
I've heard that a lot of pilots see things, but not all the pilots want to report them. I do run like a Facebook group for Alaska UFOs, and really it's just a group for Alaskans. There's a pilot in there, and he posts every once in a while these really clear shots from, like, while he's flying, you know, he'll take a couple quick pictures and he gets like some crazy UFO pictures, and they're pretty clear. You can see that it's not a plane. It's just some weird silvery thing in the distance.
So there's other stories that you talk about in the book, and you kind of go, not quite decade by decade, but there was earlier ones, like in 1909, was it the Skagway Daily Alaskan? They reported on a light appearing on a mountainside.
Yeah, that's the first one that I've ever been able to find where there's like a mysterious light. That was December 31st, 1909. And I included an actual picture of the old article in the book. And it's from the Skagway Daily Alaskan. And they reported mysterious lights along the mountainside above Burrow Creek, just in the evening. So, and they reported it between 6 and 7 p.m. That time of the year, it's probably already dark by about 4 p.m. It's dark. They can't really see what all's going on. It's also probably fairly cold. In the article, it said that the officials opted not to investigate, and they just decided it was probably a hunter or a wood chopper in the distance. I mean, at that point, they were still like horse and buggy kind of operations.
And I suppose if there were hunters up there or people like that, they'd be making lights often, so people would see them often. But this one must have been quite different to what's usually seen, otherwise it wouldn't have made the news.
Most people don't go hunting around December 31st.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's I haven't been to Skagway per se, but I've been to other places along the panhandle and stuff. And I know that it's a lot warmer down there in the winter, but it still gets cold. Up here in Fairbanks around that time, I've seen it get down to like negative 50 below, and that's Fahrenheit. So I don't know what the Celsius conversion is. But it's cold.
Yeah.
It's cold, and you try and stay inside as much as you can. I mean, I've also seen it be a lot warmer than that too. So I'd guess that it's probably anywhere from maybe 20 above to about 20 below around that time, and that time of in the evening, that article. So people are probably not out hunting or chopping wood.
One of the things about your book is so great is that there are so many sightings in there. And, it really makes a case for showing that there's UFO stuff's around us all the time. And there's the idea that the modern UFO era started in 1947 with Kenneth Arnold. But your book shows that stuff was happening before that, decades before that.
Well, okay, so the layman person thinks that UFOs kind of started with Kenneth Arnold. Maybe they know that name, but definitely with Roswell, which happened, you know, not too much after the Kenneth Arnold sighting. And anything before that, they think it just didn't happen or people didn't see it or something. So I really tried to emphasize that in the book. Going back to this 1916 date, Actually, I have three different sightings from 1916 in the book. And a lot of them are these mysterious airships. That's kind of how they refer to them. It's hard to decipher if it was some sort of blimp or like an early airplane and they just didn't know what they were looking at or something like that. There was one in here that it could be a possible spy plane from like World War One, is what it was leading up to. Oh, that's the February of 1916 one. They kind of assume that that might be an early spy plane of Japanese or German origin. So it's kind of hard to decipher, especially what they meant by an airship, because there are so many different things being developed at that point.
I suppose the weird thing is, if it was a spy plane, why would the spy light himself up with lights all over an aircraft? You'd think he'd want to sneak around with no lights on.
I don't have an answer for
that. Yeah.
I was kind of wondering myself. I was like, oh, people are hearing this and they're seeing it, and that's not very spy-like. But being in an airplane at that point would be a lot faster of getting information to and from different locations. That's all I can think of.
So you have lots of photos in the book. That's really good to see that, because it's great when you get this kind of illustration of the description. But one that was really peculiar was from the 1930s, when, was it B.J. Booth of UFO Casebook received an email with a photo?
Yeah, he received this weird photo and this strange email. It was from this guy named Mr. Holger Berg. We don't know if that's a real name or a fake name. I couldn't dig anything up on the guy. And there's this photo from around Aklutna Lake, which is just north of Anchorage. And there's like this little white figure amongst these trees that's along a dirt road. And it's kind of fuzzy because it's an old photo. And you can kind of make out like these large dark eyes on it, but it's not super clear. Apparently this guy, he had finished a season as a cannery worker and a mechanic. He was just kind of driving down the road, like kind of in a remote area, and took a picture.
And it's a weird one, isn't it? Because it could be a fake, because it says the picture was taken in the 30s, but it was only recently put forward. So you can't tell if the whole thing's a fake, because they might have photoshopped it and then just claimed it was the 1930s.
It was supposed to have come from like his grandson or something. I think it was his grandson. I talked to B.J. Booth about it and got his permission to publish it, because I couldn't get a response. The emails kind of kept getting bounced back to me from the guy who had submitted the photo.
There's another interesting one. We're talking about a cigar-shaped object in 1936 out of, is it Eklutna? Did I say that right?
Eklutna, yeah.
And also 1943, they talk about Foo Fighters being seen from the USS Williamson.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, I think we had a total of five Foo Fighter sightings around the state.
And the Foo Fighters were all over Europe and Pacific, weren't they? So there's something weird going on there. And they were just balls of light, weren't they? They didn't actually see craft.
A lot of people don't realize that Alaska, we got invaded by the Japanese. It was a big thing. They actually landed in part of the Aleutian Islands. And so there's a big battle out there. And most people have no idea. We weren't a state at the time, so we can't technically say that the U.S. was invaded. But we were a territory, and we were invaded.
There is an incident you talk about with a Douglas DC-3 and a flying saucer that happened in 1947. Mm-hmm. And the 4th Air Force said, they kind of responded basically saying, there's no such thing as flying saucers. But these guys definitely saw something.
Okay, so there was a letter that had been sent
Yeah.
from Alaska down to, I believe, San Francisco about this Douglas DC-3 incident. They were around the Bethel area, which is Bethel is in Western Alaska. It's in Western Alaska. I would show you my hand map,
Yeah.
but if you take your right hand and you put your thumb and your pointer finger downward and curl the rest of your fingers inward, you kind of have a slight representation of the state, and Bethel is on the middle knuckle there.
Right, okay.
Yeah, just so you have location. So basically, the captain and the co-pilot, they saw this saucer, and it was flying around 1,000 feet altitude, and they reported it, and then they said it was smooth, and they couldn't determine any means of propulsion, and the Air Force just kind of poo-pooed it as maybe a figment or something. I don't know how you would dismiss a sighting like that. And the Air Force is really good at it.
Yeah. Were there any sightings over military bases, or, did you have nuclear bases where UFOs were seen?
We only had one nuclear plant in Alaska, and that was over at Fort Greely. I don't think it was working for too long. I think it was set up in the 60s, and then it was like decommissioned within like a decade or something because there was some sort of leak or something like that. And they finally got rid of the last bits of it or something. But Fort Greely has had its share of sightings, but I don't know if it's related to power anything nuclear, although that is where the missile defense site is. We have a lot of Air Force stations around the state. A lot of them have been decommissioned and stuff, but they were set up because we had these massive radar sites across the state because of World War II and then the Cold War and stuff. And so I guess they're not really like bases, but Air Force stations. Does that count?
Yeah.
So for that, I do go in the book and I explain the different types of radar sites. Because we had the Dew Line, we had the White Alice communication system, and we had the ballistic missile, or BMUs, ballistic missile early warning system, ACNW, which is like a aircraft control and warning system. So we have a lot of that kind of stuff all across the state, just because we're in such a strategic position to Asia and Russia. During World War II, we had the Lend-Lease program going on, and we were supplying allies by flying over the North Pole. So Alaska was a strategic location to fly just all kinds of goods and weapons and whatever over the North Pole. And that was with Russia and other allies.
Have you had your own UFO sightings?
Yeah, I've had quite a few.
Oh,
I've had
really?
quite a few. A lot of them were, I lived a little more, lived outside of Fairbanks growing up. And so it was a little more remote. First off, let me just say that because I lived remotely, not super remote, but I was in between. Okay, so we have Fairbanks right next to Fairbanks, like butt up against it is Fort Wainwright. And on the other side of Fort Wainwright is technically the North Pole area, but it's not within city limits. It's kind of in this gray zone, you could say. So I kind of lived in that gray zone. I went to school with people who lived about 30 miles away out in this little place called Two Rivers. And, you go hang out with your friends and they're 30 miles away and you have, so there's a lot of long drives and that sort of thing. And a lot of times I'd see stuff while my mom was driving me home after hanging out with some friends while growing up. And I'd see, we have two types of black triangles up here. We have the typical TR-3B triangle with like the three lights on the bottom and like a center light. I've never seen one of those, but I have seen a strange, like elongated black triangle that has no lights, no lights at all. And then it's just massive. It's this massive black thing. And I've seen it multiple times. And it's always on a night where there's not a ton of clouds. It's usually just pretty cloudless. And I think that's because if people looked up, they might not see it. So I don't know if it's a government thing or an alien thing. You know, I'd see it moving. It'd be moving real slow and you wouldn't hear it. In fact, you almost wouldn't see it, but it would. The first time I saw it, it moved past like this really high altitude, wispy cloud. It was like almost a full moon, or maybe it was a full moon, but the moon was super bright and it was reflecting off the cloud a little bit. And I noticed it because it moved in front of that. And then once I saw it, I saw it. That's my triangle kind of story. I've seen that multiple times. There was one time it was like in January one year, again, on my way home from hanging out with a friend 30 miles away. It was like around like 8 or 9 or something at night. And there were these two orbs, like they're kind of glowing. One was red and one was blue. And they were glowing like from the inside out. So like almost like a glow stick, kind of a glow. And they were just, they weren't touching the power line, but they were like bouncing overhead. And my first thought was, are they absorbing something from the power line? And then it would only let us get so close. And then they bounced back and over the trees. And there was a dog mushing team that was back there, and it wasn't like a minute or two later and you could hear the dogs sound off.
And with the triangle that you saw, I've heard them described as big as a football field. Was it that big?
It was kind of far away, so I don't really know. You know, I've tried throwing a little trig at it to kind of guesstimate how big it was. It seems like it was so massive, it doesn't seem real. So I don't know. I mean, to me, it looked like maybe like a 2-inch thing or something at my arm's length.
Right.
I mean, I remember looking at it as if it happened the other day, and I can kind of gauge like the angle it was at and stuff like that. But it just, my calculations are always like 300, 400 feet. That just seems unreal to me because there was no sound. There's no sound associated with it. And something flying that's huge like that, I mean, it should have lights on it. But we do have, in Alaska, we do have all these stories. I was actually really surprised at how many stories of gigantic ships, like these motherships. That's all I can think of, is that they're motherships or something.
With the TR-3B, I've talked to some people who would say that it's not government stuff, that there's no such thing as a TR-3B. But what's your view on that? You think it is some maybe backward engineered technology, or is something we've invented?
I've heard a lot of talk about it being kind of a back engineering kind of project. Something that comes like right out of Area 51. Well, Alaska, we do a lot of cold weather testing and stuff up here because there's not a lot of people. They can do a lot of stuff and people just don't see it because there's no one there to see it, you know?
And you've got a photo in your book, haven't you, of a triangle, and you can see the lights on it?
That was actually from the Facebook group that I run. Someone had posted that and I said, hey, can I put this in my book? And they were happy to let me do that. That was out of, I want to say Petersburg. They were like opening their coffee shop or something early in the morning. And they just came out, looked up at the sky. I think they were like taking out the trash or something. And this thing was in the sky. So they took a picture of it.
So there's a story in your book, and there's a a kind of diagram that somebody's drawn of this site that they found. It was some hikers and they came across a UFO base camp.
Yeah. So, okay. So this one is really interesting. And this one, I actually, you know, I found something online about this. And then I was like, well, let me order this magazine if I can. And it came out of the December 1978 issue of Ideals UFO magazine. And so I actually ordered an old copy. I found it on eBay or something. And this guy who documented this, he came up to Alaska looking for possible UFO stories. And he came across this this story, and there it's actually in a couple different parts. So one of them, the first part, he talked to a National Park Service ranger who was on the ferry, because they traveled up the Inside Passage, and he said that he had seen from the outer deck one night some UFOs kind of go down near the water, and one of them, he said there were some whales, and it looks like it went down to the water next to the whales and possibly took one, you know. And I think they had like an orangish glow or something as they took off into the night. Then later the author talked to these four hikers. I want to say it was four hikers. Five hikers. And these were all grad students who kind of got together for like this month long hiking trip, you know, which some people kind of get out and do that. And they ended up outside of Eagle, which is near the Canadian border. So if you ever look at a map and if you find Toke, which is the big, Alaska Canadian crossing point, it's just kind of north of Toke. They said that they had hiked up near this ridge and they camped for the night. And one of them woke up before the rest in the morning and noticed that there were some UFOs in the sky and saw one rise up from the valley below. And he went to wake up all the rest of the guys to show them. And by the time everyone got out there, the UFOs were gone. And so he convinced them to walk down into the valley to see what that UFO had been doing down there. And he found this crazy circular site. And there was, we have a lot of wild grasses and stuff. There was a kind of a meadow area with some wild grasses. And they had been flattened out in like a swirled pattern. And there were four triangular imprints where like maybe legs had come down for like landing. And they found all kinds of stuff around this circle. They found some elk and caribou carcasses. They found a grizzly cub carcass. They found an adult grizzly carcass. They found moose or something as well, possibly. But these animals were like missing, like the bears were like missing their claws, and the elk and caribou were missing antlers or something. If it was some kind of harvest, elk and caribou are regularly game animals up here. They would have been cleaned out and meat taken and stuff. Probably the same with grizzlies. Probably wouldn't find a grizzly cub being killed or something. The strange thing is that they also found like a 15, 16 foot orca whale next to all this stuff. If you go directly from Eagle, directly down the map to the ocean, it's 400 miles away. If you're driving, you know, you probably have to add on an extra 300 to 400 miles just to get around all the mountains and stuff. But they also found like some angel hair. stuff, and they, anytime they tried to collect it, it would just kind of fall apart, which the, are you familiar with the angel hair phenomenon?
Yeah, I seem to remember, was that from more like the 40s and 50s where the that stuff would kind of seem to fall from flying saucers or be found around landing?
Yeah, it's this weird like white filament stuff, and it kind of looks like angel hair pasta from what I'm told. I've seen photos of it, but when people try and collect it, it just kind of dissolves on contact. And I think they have been able to collect a little bit of it and try and analyze it. And it just kind of comes back as, I think it has like a weird protein structure to it. And it kind of reminds me of like saliva almost with the, from the protein structures that they were able to find. It's like, so there's no like DNA in it, but it's something and they can't figure it out. But they, there, I guess there were some weird stones in these guys. One of them was, like a geology, he was a grad student for geology. And so he tried to take some of the weird stones back to Columbia University with him, for further study. What do you know? His bags went missing. It's kind of a weird story, and it seems to have a little bit of everything. It's hard to judge how true it is just because it was directly from a UFO magazine. And these UFO magazines from like the 70s and stuff, they would get people who had real sightings submit stuff. They had people who were hoaxing stuff. So it's kind of hard to gauge it. But the one person I was able to make some sort of contact with was the park ranger guy. I didn't mention UFO when I reached out to him. I just said, hey, I came across this article in a magazine from the 70s that mentions your name. Can I talk to you about it? And he just, it was, you know, I tried to keep it a little vague and he just shut it down so fast. He responded so fast and was just like, nope, I can't talk about that. Nope, never happened. It was fake. He threw a bunch of terms at it and refused to do an interview.
Well, it's interesting there's the reports of the mutilated animals there, because this thing of cattle mutilations is seen, isn't it? And it's been seen, I think, since the 60s. But I suppose in the 70s, it wouldn't be well known like it is now. Because I think, was it Linda Moulton Howe did a thing about it in the late 70s?
She really opened a lot of people's eyes to it. That's for sure. Because she had like a documentary that came out that she won an award for about it. But up here, we don't have a ton of cattle or anything like that, but we do have crazy amounts of like caribou herds and that sort of thing. So, why does it just have to be cows is my question. On the flip side of that, I actually pushed back publication on this book because we had cattle mutilation locally last year. And I've braced this book with some pictures.
Yeah, I saw the pictures. It's that kind of classic thing that you see in these pictures where the animal has been cut and it seems to have been cut with real precision and that there's no blood around the cow.
Yeah, there's no blood on the cow. There's no blood on the ground around the cow. It's so weird. And it's missing an eye and it's missing at least one ear. I can't tell if the second ear in the photo is underneath it or if it's also been removed. But it's also missing its udder. But the belly is still bloated. So they were able to remove the udder without piercing the stomach or any other organs.
It just doesn't make sense, does it? I mean, if it was people doing it, they'd have to be doing it over such a wide distance, carrying such tools that would be capable of cutting like that and the blood not coming out. It's just, I see it like crop circles, because crop circles is supposed to be maybe a UFO thing, but it's just so weird. Who would think that up?
Well, And there were actually three cows that ended up getting mutilated. They had two the first week, and then the second week they had another one, and that's when that it was reported in the newspapers, and there were these two photos that circulated with it. It was found kind of in the woods near some fields out in Delta Junction. Delta Junction is right next to Fort Greeley. So it's like, technically, I think the road sign says that it's 5 miles, between the two, but it's they're right next to each other. And there's a lot of agricultural stuff down there in Delta Junction. They have buffalo down there, or at least they have a herd of buffalo down there. They do a lot of grain crops and hay and all that kind of stuff. If you're gonna find agricultural stuff going on in Alaska, it's gonna be either Delta Junction or like the Matsu Valley, which is Matsu Valley is north of Anchorage. It's like Wasilla and Palmer primarily. This is definitely in like a farming community. And when this came out, I left work early and I ran down to Delta Junction, which is about an hour and a half drive, went to this area and I was looking around. And it's not an area where there would be a cow roaming around because there were open fields that didn't have fences around them, right? You don't want cows tromping through open fields like that. So I don't know why the cow would have been found in that area. There are other cow area or cow fields, cattle fields around there, but where this thing was found is just it just seems so out of place. And I didn't get any EMF readings or radiation readings or anything like that.
So if we could change the subject,
Oh yeah.
the photos you've got in the book of this Anchorage law office, and this guy comes in who's like one of the men in black, and just it's so weird what happens there.
This is one of those internet finds that you don't know, you don't really know what's going on. And you don't know if it's like a hoax or if it's real or what. But there's a channel on YouTube called, so there's a channel called Apex TV, a security guard for a law firm in Anchorage sent in the security footage, which is visual only, no audio. And then this guy, he's in a black suit. He has a bald head, looks kind of tall and skinny. You can't really make out his face in the video. He comes in and they converse, and this girl like goes for the office handgun. And then she moves and she sets this handgun down and she leaves the office with this guy, and she doesn't take her purse or anything, and she doesn't lock up, she just leaves. And it's really quite bizarre, and I have some stills in the book of it, and it's easy to find if you poke around on YouTube.
She takes her camera with her proper SLR camera.
Yeah, she has a DSLR camera that she takes with her. And I guess 2 weeks after Apex TV received this footage and the explanation from the security guard who ended up getting fired because he sent security footage from a law firm, they've ended up having a 55-minute conversation with the girl in the video. And she had gone hiking with some friends and took some, she found like a little cave or something and took some photos of some strange stuff in the cave. Then this happened. This guy who kind of put her into a vehicle, drove her somewhere that she couldn't figure out where she was. I want to say that there was like Yeah, there was a second Men in Black figure that joined them, and they kind of grilled her about what she had been doing out there. They took her SD card from her camera and kind of returned her, but she didn't know where she had been. She kind of blacked out at one point and then woke up, and she had been returned to, it just says that she woke up. I don't think she really identified where she woke up.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was at work or if it was at her house or whatever. But the police had been called out to do a wellness check on her because I guess she had been gone for a while.
And do you have reports of abductions? Do people come forward and say they've had that kind of thing happen to them in Alaska?
When I was the state director for MUFON, which was a couple years ago, and I stopped because I just got busy with some other stuff. There were some cases of people having been abducted and looking for assistance and all that kind of stuff. But I really didn't put a whole bunch of that in the book just because I didn't have people's permission. And since I'm not with MUFON at this point, it would have been hard to get that information, that case information. And you're not supposed to look up people's private information and share it publicly like that with MUFON.
Okay. All right. So it is a thing. I mean, it's not surprising.
It happens. I just didn't put a whole bunch of it in the book.
Yeah. It's not surprising that it would be happening there because it seems to happen everywhere, doesn't it?
Yeah. The people I did reach out to in regards to that, they really didn't want their information put into a book. Up here, you get a lot of people and they have seen things and they believe things, but they don't want other people to know that they have seen things and that they believe in things because it might affect their work or something. We have a lot of federal, state, and government employees up here.
Well, we've been talking about your book, which is called Sources of the North, A History of UFOs in Alaskan Airspace. And you mentioned the UFO Facebook page. Couldn't anybody join that?
I get a little weird about it because I'm the admin for it. Because I'm trying to keep it solely to Alaskan sightings and stuff like that. So anyone's welcome to join, but sometimes, you know, people don't like it when I delete posts because they're posting something about like a California sighting or, you know, something else. It's strictly for Alaska UFOs. You know, and I think most of the people in the group realize that and they appreciate it. You know, we let in some Canadian sightings because we're right next door to Canada. And sometimes you get similar sightings that coincide with our sightings. So I won't say no, but it's one of those things, you know, if you post the wrong thing, I'll get rid of you.
But people might be able to look it up and just see the pictures that are on there, maybe photos of UFOs. It would be fascinating to see them.
Yeah, we actually, you know, it comes in spurts. Sometimes we get people in there and it's just like a wave of UFO sightings for like a couple months. And then there's like nothing for a couple months. And then it's like it starts back up again. And it's pretty interesting. And people are willing to discuss stuff without being jerks about it.
And the book can be found on Amazon, can't it? And people can get it there.
Yeah.
Do you have the urge to do another book?
I'm working on a new book, a new project. And it's, I'm focusing on time travel, parallel worlds, teleportation cases, government projects and stuff that deal with that kind of thing. And I'm writing the science aspect of it to help explain a lot of stuff through, you know, different theories and all that. It's a lot of physics. Excuse me. But I am looking for stories from people. I have a collection already, but I'm looking for more. You know, I'm going to be talking about like the Mandela effect. You know, people have time slips and those kind of things where they might encounter a fog or some kind of weirdness as they're traveling. I hear about it often from people who are driving, and they kind of drive to this area where that they're familiar with, but they haven't been to in a while. And it looks like it's out of a different decade or something, and they don't quite recognize stuff and they don't quite feel right. And so they, instead of stopping like they have planned, they just kind of keep moving. And then they, I don't know, like go through a fog or something again, and they're back to feeling normal. And the next place that they stop at, everything's normal. So I don't know what that is, but it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I talked to somebody on the Past Lives podcast, and they had a story in their book that was weird. It was just this woman was in this university, and she needed to go to the university library, which wasn't very big, but she felt weird as she went in there. And there was a woman on a ladder wearing this really old dress, picking a book up from this top shelf. And that woman looked round and smiled at her, and she was like, oh, okay. And she carried on. And as she was walking out, she looked out the window and she thought, hang on, the road doesn't look right. I'm sure there was a building down there on the right-hand side. But then she walked out and felt weird again. And she realized the road was wrong when she'd looked out the window. And she went back in, and it's like the library had all changed again. And that building was back on the road. The old woman was gone. And later she saw a oil painting, a portrait of a woman that worked in the university like a long time ago. And it was her portrait. And it's just, you know, if somebody was making it up, it seems like such a weird little story to just make up.
You know, there are some things that I recall happening. Like I was a kid at the time, so I didn't clip the articles or anything like that. I just remember reading about it or hearing about it in the news or something. And as I found out, like it didn't happen. I can't find any information on it or something. And I'm just like, no, I remember that being like a big deal. It was like a big deal in the news. And it's so bizarre. So I've been trying to figure out like what's going on with that. And I have like this, I have this theory. And do you know who Dr. Travis Taylor is?
No, I don't know that name.
Oh, he's a physicist, and he's worked with the NASA and the DOD and stuff like that. Right now, he's been on the Skinwalker Ranch TV show, as their in-house physicist. and he's also been on some other stuff, I think Ancient Aliens or something. And I asked him, I saw him at PhenomeCon in Vernal, Utah last year. And I asked him about this multiverse idea, because you often hear about the multiverse being in bubbles, right? And I said, what if you have two bubbles that kind of collide and form a double bubble, right? Which is mathematically possible. A lot of people ask about the math behind it, and it's totally possible. There's actually a name for it, and I can't think of it right off the top of my head. What if that's what's causing the Mandela effect that we've been experiencing? Like, what if it happened recently and that's why? So I don't know if there's anything to that. I have an art degree, I have a history degree, and I'm working towards a master's in space operations. I do not have a physics degree. I just read a lot of physics books. So I don't know. I don't know if it's something that's totally possible. I need to make friends with a physicist.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. Well, it's been great talking to you, and thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. And I'll put links to the books in the show notes, and thanks again for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me. I haven't done a podcast in a while, so it was fun.
And that was an interview with Jessie Desmond about her book, Sources of the North, A History of UFOs in Alaska Airspace. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon, where you can hear the rest of this extended interview. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. If you join the $2 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. And if you join the $5 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. And when you sign up, you get access to all the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called Past Lives Podcast. There are over 270 episodes. On the Past Lives Podcast, I look into evidence for the afterlife, such as near-death experiences, children with past life memories, mediumship, deathbed visions, and other phenomena. And also release an extra episode of Past Lives Podcast every Thursday, and that's called Paranormal Stories, and that always has UFO information. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. Did you have a report in the book of a crashed disc? Was there a rumor of that happening?
There was a rumor from the 40s. There was a rumor from the 40s, and someone in Anchorage reported seeing a disc overhead, and it kind of